Positive Mind with Armand DeMille.
Everybody, this is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Positively minded life is always something we strive for. We're always looking to feel good in some way or better. You know, we want to feel in balance. I was sitting at the Trackside Cafe the other day. This is a little tiny place that's built into a train station in Spionk, which is out in Long Island. And it's just like such a tiny little place. I really enjoy it. But a lot of people come by. And I was sitting there, and there were two elders who were dressed in shorts, and they were wearing checkered shirts. And then there was one man with three small children, and they all seemed to have jeans on of their own kind. And then one young couple who were very much in love, who were dressed in their Sunday best. And then there were six motorcyclists who were just passing by, who decided to get off and have breakfast there, all very amicably, nicely, pleasantly. And I looked in this very small place that couldn't be any bigger than 12 feet by 12 feet. All these people sitting at individual tables at this luncheonette kind of ancient-looking old train station. And I realized how well they got along together. Everybody got along with everybody. Everybody got along, and even though they were in their own worlds, they got along, but they looked so different that if you looked from a distance, you would wonder, how did this happen in one room? How did this happen that you got so many different types, different races, different religions, different clothing, different tastes? But they had one thing in common. They liked good food. And in this little truck stop, they have good food. It's honest stuff they make. So how do you account for the taste that people have? There's a Roman expression that is something like gustabus non estis deputedam, something like that, which means taste is not to be disputed. So what is it about taste? What is it? Why do different people have different kind of tastes in art, in music, in clothing? And, you know, you would kind of imagine, oh, this is kind of simple, you know? One of the things I always get a kick out of is people wearing T-shirts. And their T-shirts are dead giveaways in some way, you know, because even though they may be advertising some kind of clothing, their T-shirts are a dead... It's like it's saying something about them. If you look at what they have to say, why are they wearing that on their shirt? Why is somebody wearing a gaping mouth on their shirt? Why is somebody wearing a shirt that is so aggressive? Why is somebody announcing one band or another on their shirt to look cool? The other day, somebody came in actually for a therapy session, and they were wearing a shirt that said Armani Exchange. And I said, man, it's pretty close. Pretty close. So how do you account for taste? Well, here's a different way of looking at it, different than you might imagine. One, we always think that taste reflects the inner us. I say no. Taste generally reflects the missing inner us. What do I mean by that? We see something as beautiful when we perceive that it contains in a concentrated form something in our society or in our personal lives that is desperately lacking. So I'll give you a good example of that. The recent attraction of rustic things. People love the rustic. They love the mountains, and they love rustic clothing, and they're wearing, you know, they're wearing shirts that are rustic and flannel, and this kind of recently has come around. Here in a world where people are very complex, in a high-tech world, where people are feeling their disconnection with nature in all its forms, they suddenly go to the clothing that reflect what they need the most, not what they are, because they're lost in the high-tech world. So they're going to reach for the rustic world, saying, this is what I need. This is the environment. There are people actually building multi-million-dollar log cabins now. They're not good enough to leave it as a log cabin. Now they're going to make it a multi-million-dollar log cabin, caught in the trap. A nearly empty canvas would be exquisitely beautiful to a chaotic society or a member of a chaotic society. So when you suddenly feel like you look at a form by Picasso or a single line and you say, wow, that one thing, the simplicity, the beauty is so attractive, it means what you're missing inside you is simplicity and beauty, not what it reflects about you. So a person who wants to live an austere life, who has a house, you go to their house and they have no furniture and they have very simple and everything is very simple. And you kind of look at it and you wonder, you say, oh, this is how simple this person is inside. No, 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 no. Inside that person feels chaos. They feel chaos and they feel confused and they feel anxious. And what they're trying to do is limit the environment, limit the world they live in. So their taste reflects what they need, not what they are. Same thing about clothing. The clothing a person wears, which is kind of a reflection of what you think they are on the inside, you know. But if somebody wears the color red, you know, and they're wearing these loud red clothing, they're trying to wake up in some way. Or if somebody's attracted to these colors, they're kind of trying to wake up because they feel depressed inside. So the people who wear the most flamboyant clothing very often are the people most depressed. Even just give an example in furniture, gilding. You know, it is gilding, which is, you know, painting gold edges on furniture. Gilding has never been attractive to the truly wealthy people. The truly wealthy don't see gilding as something that's attractive to them in furniture. It is very attractive to the people who feel impoverished and oppressed. The poor people love the gilding, see? And they love, and it's if you feel poor on the inside, you love lavish wealth. You love seeing gilding and diamonds and crystals and things like that. But if you feel wealthy on the inside and you feel like you have that inside you, then that's not necessary. You don't have to have it on the outside. And strangely enough, and being that I come from an Italian family, my family has always been attracted to gilding. They've always liked it. They've always liked the ornate, and they've always liked what we call Italian style, which really means they're fighting off their sense of impoverishment, which most of them came from, and trying to just look at something that represents that which they need. Not money, but a feeling of wealth. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about taste and what accounts for taste and personality, and I'm going against the common belief. The common belief is that your taste reflects who you are. And I say, no, your taste reflects who you're not. Let's go back for just a moment to talk about how we get through life. We get through life by taking a look as children at what it is that's going to get us to be happy. What's going to get us the love we need? And we figure out either we're going to be ourselves, or ourselves are not acceptable to the people in charge. If your real self is not acceptable to the people in charge, you develop another self, an artificial self. And this artificial self looks at the world and sees the world, and now the artificial self says, if I am this way, people will love me. So the artificial self is showing the reflection of what you really need. The artificial self will say, I'll wear sexy clothing. And if I wear sexy clothing, men will be attracted to me and they will love me and desire me. And what I need is to feel desired because I truly feel worthless. You see? Or if you want to wear frumpy clothing, what I need is to be ignored. What I need to do is to be ignored because the attention that I'm getting always makes me uncomfortable. People are wearing not who they are, but who they're not, and who they need, what they think they need, to make them feel a little better. So does your style of clothing reflect your inner self or your inner mood? Yes, but not directly. It's reflecting the needs of your inner self and the needs of your inner mood. How you want to be seen, too. There's an interesting experiment we used to do a while back. It was called a very simple one. We asked you your favorite animal. And I'll ask you now, we're not going to do much with this, but what is your favorite animal? Off the top of your head, could you pick your favorite animal? Write it down. Write it down right now, your favorite animal. Good. Put that down. 1, 2, 3. There it is. All right. Now your favorite color. Right? And write down your favorite color. And then we'll go with those, just those two for now. Okay? Your favorite animal reflects, by your immediate instinct, who you really are on the inside. One of the ways we would discover that is we would ask you for 3 adjectives relating to your favorite animal. So a person might pick a cat, for example, and they'd say beautiful, sleek, and independent. And we'd say that's who you really are on the inside, because your instinct was to choose something that you kind of look at, that you kind of need, that that's what your real self is, the cat. That's what you're yearning for. But the color is a different thing. Almost invariably, the color that a person chooses is how they want to be seen, not who they really are. So I have my assistant here in the studio, Stephanie Dumbra. What was the color you chose? Just say it.
Green.
Green. Right? Give me 3 things that, Stephanie, if you would, give me 3 characteristics of the color green off the top of your head.
Envy.
Envy. Okay, what else?
The environment.
Uh-huh.
Peacefulness.
Peacefulness, right? Let's just take the peacefulness for the moment because that's a true adjective in it. You know, envy being more of an adverb and more what it engenders. But let's take peacefulness. According to this theory, the picture that you, the color that you pick is how you want to be seen, not how you really are on the inside. Now, what was your animal?
Horse.
Give me 3 words for the horse. First word you can think of that are descriptive adjectives, not adverbs.
Free.
Fast.
Strong.
There you are. Okay, that's a good description of you. Free, fast, strong. That's who you really are. But you want to hide it by looking peaceful. See, green is your cover-up for the horse. And there ain't no green horses out there. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. So the colors that we pick, and which is kind of interesting because it's the very colors that we choose to be, that we'll choose to wear as well, you know, what we put out there and what we're attracted to. Now, I go to you about mood as well. When you think about taste, mood is very important. If you're a down mood, you're always fighting up. See, there are these polarities that we have. Excitement is one polarity, and depression is another polarity. Those are the two ends of a pole. Grandeur is one end of a polarity. Depression is another end of a polarity. We're always fighting between these polarities. So people who are depressed very often are attracted to grandeur. There's a little event happening around here, around where my office is today, which is going to be a band, a rock band. And people are flooding to it, flooding from all over the world. They are coming to just go to Columbus Circle, to be there. If you want to be there, it's going to be there right after the show, somewhere around 3 o'clock today. To be there, to listen to this band that's a very famous band, and they're just coming from everywhere. Why? Because the band has a hope of giving you energy. And from where you are missing this energy. Hard rock bands, heavy metal bands, right? Metal bands, hard rock bands, they promise you energy. In a world where people feel like they're not getting much energy, where they don't have much energy left, where people are tired and depressed and sad underneath, they reach for the energetic exchange. This is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind, talking to you about the concept of taste, and we'll be taking your calls a little later about your individual taste, the things you like. We talked about furniture, we talked about clothing, we will talk about music too, your taste in music. People who love minimalism in all forms generally are oppressed by their own sense of panic and chaos inside. Keep in mind, when you're anxious, right, it's one of the most worst feelings you could have. Anxiety is worse than depression. Anxiety makes you feel like you're just flipping out. You know, you're going off your edges. You can't control it. Depression, at least, is like you're going to sleep. So people prefer depression to anxiety, and very often people who are very anxious get themselves depressed just to deal with their anxiety, because anxiety is the most hated of all feelings. I mean, just think about what it's like. It's like being plugged into an electric, by an electric cord. You're all over the place. You feel nervous. You hate it when you feel nervous, don't you? So what do people do when they get nervous? They look to cancel it in some way. Very often what people will do is call their mother. Right? Guaranteed. If you're alienated from your mother and you got a certain miserable relationship with your mother, you call her up, she's going to get you depressed. You have an argument with her, you get depressed, and there, boom, the antidote to your anxiety. You got yourself depressed. People depress themselves to avoid anxiety. Now, what does that have to do with what we're talking about? Well, anxiety is at the basis of a lot of taste. People choose things that are the opposite of them, that is what they need. So people who are very anxious, nervous people love the parks and they love the quiet and they love nature because they need it, not because they are natural. You understand? People who are, on the other hand, who are depressed, they love energy. And they are attracted to energy. In Columbus Circle, this day will be a good example of it. You'll see thousands and thousands of people hoping to be sparked by each other and by the band on stage. Armand DeMille with you. You know, let's talk about another form of taste that I find very curious, which has to do with cleanliness. Cleanliness is kind of an interesting thing. You know, we've gotten kind of germ-phobic. Smells are just smells. Taste is just taste. Germs are just germs. You know, back in the old days, the Egyptians, they were very clean. They practically lived in the baths. The Egyptians were terrific. They were living in water. They always were clean. They worked on cleanliness. Egyptians, sure. Then came, you know, Europeans. Europeans, the most enlightened of all people, were filthy. They never took baths. It was a little too cold to get in a shower. The reason they had weddings in June was because the water finally got warm enough for the woman to take a bath. Otherwise, she smelled rotten. You know, that's where we get June brides from. That we feel a big distrust of germs. We have gotten to the point where we fear. We have a deep distrust of our own bodies, a profound pessimism about human nature, and we believe that your body is brimming with toxins and that the cracks in the tiles host scary fungus that must be cleaned away. You know, look at in between those tiles in the bathroom. Look how dirty they are. Well, you know, we scrub and we polish and we keep wiping away dirt almost as if it's like the Macbeth thing, you know, out, spot, out. What are we cleaning up so much? Oh, we want to get rid of all the microbes? This relates to taste. The microbes, if you took all the microbes, there are so many microbes out there, if you took them all and added them up and weighed them, they would weigh 25 times the weight of every living cell put together. every living complex cell put together. They're 25 times as big as we are. What are we doing killing them? Why are we killing off the microbes? You know what happens when we get an antibiotic, antibacterial, antifungal, and we spray it? We are encouraging supercells. They're saying, hey, we better get out of here. Mr. Clean is here. Let's go get our cousin Vinny, right, and send him back. He doesn't care about Mr. Clean. So people who are trying to do away with dirt, what is the idea? Why are they doing away with so much dirt? Well, what does that say about taste? People who are so striving to have everything clean and neat, and you can't have any dirtiness anywhere. Researchers find that the subjects who are most prompt to focus on unethical behaviors like lying, stealing, and cheating are more likely to engage in activities suggesting that they feel physically dirty, therefore they become cleanophiles. See, the people who feel the dirtiest become phobic about germs. And that's what you're seeing. And so we see this attraction to purity and cleanliness. And just think about it in another way. You can't do anything about life, but you can do something about the germs. So if you're nervous and you're anxious and you don't know what to do with yourself, start cleaning your house. You know, clean every inch of it. Clean it with a toothbrush. You know, you think you can get it clean because you can. You can do something about it when you feel powerless in the world. So another possible taste that we have showing the fear that we have is this taste we have for cleanliness and order. So lastly, let's talk about music. You know, music is such a fantastic tool for tweaking our moods. There were two scientists called Sarah Cullio and Elika. In 2007, they investigated the ways people use music to control and improve their moods. They did it by interviewing a group of adolescents from Finland. So it may be a small group. It was adolescents in Finland, but they came out with something quite interesting. That here is the thing that music does for you. Number one, it's entertainment. At the fundamental level, music provides stimulation. It lifts the mood before going out. It passes the time while we're doing the washing up. It accompanies traveling, reading, and surfing the web. It kind of helps you eat up time. It takes away boredom. Music. It is entertainment. Number two, it's revival. Music revitalizes in the morning and calms you in the evening. It wakes you up when you wake up, and it puts you to sleep when you go to bed at night. Number three, music is a strong sensation. Music can provide deep, thrilling, emotional experiences, especially when you're a performer. You know, if you're a performer, boy, you can get really, and I was a performer, boy, you get into that music. It is just magnificent feeling. Diversion. Music distracts the mind from unpleasant thoughts, which can easily fill the silence. You know, there are people I know who can't stand silence, and so they're always playing music, 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 or television, television, television. Fill the space because I'm afraid of my mind. Discharge. Music. If you match music to your deep mood, you can release emotions like purging and cleansing. You could do either music that makes you so sad it makes you cry, or music that makes you dance, but it's like a purging, like a cleansing. Mental work. Music encourages daydreaming, sliding into old memories, exploring the past. So if you have music triggers, it kind of gets your mind going in reverie. So it's another way of activating your brain. And solace. Solace, a very big need. Shared emotion, shared experience, a connection to someone lost. The music I used to listen to with my dad when I was little. So these are seven strategies of music, you know, the seven ideas: entertainment, revival, strong sensation, diversion, discharge, mental work, and solace. Now these seven strategies all aim for two goals. Here's what all of the things that music do aims to. Number one, control mood. See, we don't like moods to be what they are. We want to control them. We want to control our mood. When we turn on the radio or the music, like sometimes when I'm driving, I get sleepy. I don't want to get sleepy. I may be exhausted. It may have been a long drive. I'll turn on the radio because it will actually shift my mood. It'll wake me up. Controlling mood and improving mood, that's what the idea is. One of the beauties of music is it can accomplish more than one goal at a time. Uplifting music can divert you, entertain you, and revive you. See these seven needs I talked about. Sad, soulful music can provide solace, encourage mental work, and discharge emotions. So it's a mixture of all of those seven elements that we do when we listen to music. It's kind of magical. Distraction is considered one of the most effective strategies for regulating mood. You know, don't think about it. You're feeling bad, you're feeling depressed, stop thinking about it. Music has been strongly connected with this. If you put on music, you can change your mood. Am I suggesting that's what you do? No, I suggest you make peace with your moods, that you deal with the inner real self, that you don't get away from the real self. It doesn't mean I'm against music. But I'm saying when music becomes your taste because you're fighting off something, you know, better off find out the thing you're fighting with and tackle with it. You know, find out who you really are. One of the negative connections that was found is that sad music sometimes promotes rumination. And rumination is a constant examination of emotional states, which can lead to less clarity. Rumination doesn't always work for getting things clear. Sometimes you just obsess about something and your mind spins out of gear. So sad music, you know, like playing some very deep Beethoven or something, you know, can bring you backwards and it can get you stuck. But also, music can help you understand your own emotions if you know how to deal with it. This is Armand DeMille. Just for a quickie, rock music, you know, who likes rock music? Usually a person who likes rock music is a social person, but they get easily stressed out or depressed, strangely enough. Country music is usually athletic, reliable, and focused, friendly, cheerful person, and you don't get stressed out or depressed very often. You know, you don't. Country music. It's you kind of take it as it is, and you're probably voting for McCain. Pop music. Now, pop music is you're friendly and social, but not very verbally gifted. Simple pop music is not, you know, it's just very simple, and you'll like it that way. Rap, funk, or electronic dance music, you're an energetic and social person. You're really energetic is what it reflects. Hip-hop and soul music says you're upbeat and conventional, is what it says. And classical music is you're reflective and complex. People describe you as quiet and thoughtful, and you have a gift for language, but also a gift for seeing the glass half empty instead of seeing it half full. Romanticism goes with classic music, and classic music touches your soul, and it almost makes you weep, and that's... This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. When we come back, I want to talk about your tastes. I want to find out about your tastes, because we have here today the last program that we'll be doing on our regular schedule. In the next week, I will only be with you on Thursday from 1 to 3 p.m. That's Thursday, with a special about 9/11, of course, because the date will be 9/11/08. 9/11, of course, is an anniversary of 9/11, so I'll be doing some special programming about that. So that'll be next Thursday, and I will not be with you on Tuesday and Wednesday. And then after that, it'll be on an irregular schedule while we go through the marathon. But prepare to support WBAI, my friends. It is a remarkable station. We bring you remarkable things and remarkable ideas and, of course, the remarkable positive mind and the remarkable music that comes with it. I will be back with you in just a couple of minutes, after which I'm going to play you music by, get this, because I'm going to tell you in advance, B.B. King and Eric Clapton together together, B.B. King and Eric Clapton together, doing a piece that I think you're going to really love. Armand DeMille, I'll be back with you in a minute.
Don't tell me to stop. Tell the rain not to drop. Tell me everything I'm not. Don't tell me to stop.
Hi, this is Liz Wright. You're listening to WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange
Sorry,
of information
Armand,
and ideas.
Sorry, Armand, the computer froze up.
Heard here
Couldn't do
Monday
anything about it.
Thursday,
stand by.
From 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here on
4,
WBAI
3,
New York.
2, go.
Loved you, come rain or come shine, high as a mountain and deep as a river, come rain or come shine.
Well, I guess when you met me, it was just one of those things. But don't you ever bet me, 'cause I'm gonna be true if you let me.
Oh, you're gonna love me like nobody's loved me. Happy together, unhappy together, won't that be fine?
B.B. King and Eric Clapton, Riding with the King, is the name of the album that they put together. It's kind of beautiful. You know, B.B. King just never seems to let himself get old. He's always kind of moving out, you know. He's always got some movement. And it seems to be towards youth, which is probably what he needs the most, you know. Here we go again, talking about it. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Your taste reflects your innermost need. What you appreciate, what you love, except for some people. For some people, art has no meaning whatsoever. Some people, they pick art not because of a meaning it has to them. They think. They think it's because of the effect it has on other people. They would like to see other people affected by the art that they pick. So they choose their art according to the effect on other people. Oh, I think they'd like this. I think this will look good. I think this is right for the people. But again, it's about controlling mood. The idea is, if I put this on the wall, I will control their mood by changing it. So let's say you pick out something really outrageous, you know, like nude people doing outrageous sexual things, and you hang it on the wall. What you want to do is change the mood of the people who see it. You're looking to shock them. You're looking to get them to feel a certain way. You're looking to get them to react to it. Or if you take a painting of something really peaceful and beautiful and you put it on the wall, you know, and you say, oh, here's something. You're looking to change their mood. I know a man. Lives up in Vermont with his wife. He said when he built his house, he painted it pure white. Everything on the inside is painted white. He said, I hang nothing on the wall. And I said, why, Gene, do you hang nothing on your wall? He said, because my wife is my work of art. She is so beautiful that I want nothing to distract me. So I look at when I look for beauty, the thing that I see, everything is plain except when she comes by. And she's my work of art. Sounds beautiful, doesn't it? What's it saying? An interesting thing. Hey, our telephone number here is 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. I'm speaking out, trying to find some kind of peace and justice for the germs today. I mean, you know, just to think about it, we keep killing all those germs. They're the largest living population. Germs existed 3 billion years before humans arrived. Then we arrived with a spray bottle, right? And they're more capable of living and reproducing in extreme conditions than any higher organisms such as humans. They recycle carbon and nitrogen, nutrients that we need, you know? And what do? We attack them. We kill them. We say, bad germs. But we don't feel bad about it. You know, we kill germs. That's good. Kill a cockroach. Oh, my God, how un-Buddhist of me. Scientists believe there could be trillions of bacterial species on Earth. And trillions. We've identified like about 1% of them. And a Princeton geoscientist once estimated that 500,000 different types of bacteria in one small scoop of soil. 500,000 types of bacteria. Kill them all. Yes, you got to get them, right? Knock them out. No, my friends, the thing you're trying to clean is what's dirty inside you. Not saying you shouldn't keep things neat and in order and try to keep things clean and disease-free. I'm not saying that at all, but hey, don't be a fanatic. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take one of your calls. Hi there, you're on the air. 212-209-2900.
Yes. Hello, Armand?
Yes.
Hi, how are you today? My name is Adrian from Brooklyn.
Hello, Adrian.
Listen to your show regularly and enjoy it and get a lot out of it. And as far as your topic today, you know, I'm 45 now. And I bought a sport car about 3 years ago. I was told that I had, you know, medical condition and such, and I think I panicked and felt that mortality, and I bought this car, and it's been a source of friction between my wife and I ever since, because she looks at it as something that takes away from, you know, my attention to her, which I don't necessarily think, but I'm wondering, you know, everybody seems to say, you know, when they see me, they say, you know, a midlife crisis. But my retort to that is, it's not a midlife crisis. It's gratification delayed. How does that
fit? All right, let's see how that fits in. What kind of a sports car did you get, by the way, so I could picture it?
A Nissan 350Z.
Okay, so you got this nice little very fast car, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a zippy kind of car.
Yellow.
Give me three words to describe it, okay?
Strong.
Strong.
Sexy. And a third word, envy.
Strong, sexy, and envy because people envy it, right?
Mm-hmm.
How would you feel about people feeling that way to you? How would you like people to perceive you as strong, sexy, and envious, enviable?
Oh, my God. You know, I never thought of it that way. Those are three things that if people thought about me that way, I would not mind.
No, and you would get rid of your car. See, you're looking for it, so you got it on the outside. That's what people do. They buy what they need the most to feel. And so now let me ask you this. Where, obviously, you're in a marriage, and in your marriage you have somebody telling you that toy which you like, I don't think you should have. So you have a kind of a parental relationship with somebody who's telling you what's right for you to have.
Right.
So you can't feel too strong in that relationship. You feel like you're always kind of struggling. You keep your head above water.
That's very true. And you know, the thing that I wonder about, I'm in a club with this the car, and, you know, sometimes I even feel, you know, that it smothers you in the sense that this is something that I bought thinking that it was going to satisfy certain things in me and make me feel, you know, make me feel good and, you know, bring me back the nostalgia of, you know, my younger days and involvement cars and et cetera. But sometimes it seems that this thing, it's like it overtakes me, and sometimes it's like I'm the person no longer existing. It's like the car is the person and I'm the car, you know.
Right to it.
Does that
absolutely
follow?
Absolutely. So, you know, the point of it is you need the car for as long as you need the car, and, you know, the car is you and you are the car in many ways. It's what you need. I have a question about your strength and feeling empowered in your relationship with your mate, because I think if you're the kind of person where people are picking on you for having your own toy, no matter what it is, then there's something about you that puts yourself out there as a kind of I'm a child and you got to tell me what to do, you know? And it's that kind of thing. So you've got to develop your muscle. And I would say that the best way to do that is to join some kind of a group where you could be, you could really feel like you are yourself. Because right now you're holding on to this symbol of freedom.
Well, you know, and it's interesting you say that, because one of the things is, like, I'm the type of person that I honestly will go out of my way to help people. And,
sure.
And the word no is almost impossible for me to say, and that often causes me problems. And you know, I find, like, I have there's a lot of things going on in my life right now. I have a parent that's, you know, very sick, and he demands a lot of time and attention from me. Mm. And it's like, you know, I never feel that I can say no. So in some ways, I think maybe I've looked at this material thing as a way to escape all of that.
Sure, it makes sense, huh? And do you, when you get in your car and you turn up the music and you're going at whatever speed you go, do you ever get that feeling like, wow, I'm free?
I do. Honest to God, I feel so empowered, you know, when I drive, that it sometimes I think maybe that replaces the helplessness I feel or the powerlessness I feel in the other relationships that I have in my life.
Yeah, it's pretty wise stuff. You're pretty insightful. I think it's going to be you'll be ready when you're ready. You know what I mean?
Armand, you have no idea the pearls of wisdom you've just dropped on me, and you've given me some serious food for thought. So let me hang up and let others get a chance to talk.
Thanks a lot for giving
me a call.
Thank
you so much, and have a nice day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello, Armand. Greetings to you, and thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to add something to what you were talking about art. I think sometimes art is, especially performance art, is meant to draw out or to reconnect with a dropped stitch inside of ourselves. When it's not so much changing anything although I understand you mean the external experience of it, but I don't mean about changing anything that wasn't there or that isn't there, but drawing out what has been misplaced inside so that it can flow again in synchronicity with everything else.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment. Are you a dancer?
I used to be.
Yeah. And you think the dance was your way of making that connection, right?
Yes.
Right? And you don't do the dance anymore?
No.
Why not?
Life has a way of changing courses.
I understand. But what stopped you from dancing?
I had a relationship that took my entire self.
Okay, so now you're saying something very important. There was a self that used to get manifested in the dance, but your relationship kind of filled that whole place, and you had to deal with that. And so now that relationship is over, and where's your dance? It's sitting in the closet waiting for you.
No, the relationship isn't over.
Okay, but where's the dance? You know where it is, right? You know.
Oh, I'm still doing with everything I touch and every interaction I make. I'm trying to do the same dancing, only not the way I used to do it.
So what does it take for you to go back and do it the way you used to do it? What's your name, by the way?
Judy.
Judy, what does it take for you to go back and to do the dance the way you know how to really do it, how to connect with yourself? What does it take? What does it take for you to do? Music and a space.
And time.
Well, time. And as much time as you have on this radio right now. Mm-hmm. You know?
Oh, I do that kind of dancing a lot. Well, even while I'm scrubbing floors or toilets.
Uh-huh. Good. So I want to see Judy. I want you to tell me, when do you plan to do this? Are we going to get this done
soon? Oh, I've been doing it today.
Yeah, I need you to reconnect with that part of yourself that you buried underneath your relationship. You need to be able to bring that energy back to yourself. It'll help you much better with your conflictual relationship. It'll help you if you have that spirit about yourself.
Thank you.
My pleasure, Judy. Thanks for calling in.
Bless you, sweetheart. Bye-bye.
212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. Hi. Hello there. You're on the air. Hi there. Yeah, you're there.
Well, hello. I was listening to your program. I tuned in a bit late, and I gather you were talking about different personalities and what kind of music they're attracted to.
I was talking about taste in general and what makes people attracted to taste, and just for a quick review, I'll say to you that what I saw in taste is that you're breathing a little too far into the telephone at the moment. Hold on.
Sorry.
Okay, what I found in taste is that people usually, their taste reflects what they need rather than what they are. And that taste reflects, including in music, it reflects what you need for your life and for a missing part of your life rather than who you are really in your life. Can you talk to that?
Yeah, well, you know, you mentioned the different categories of music, and I heard what you had to say about pop music and the kind of person likes pop music. So, well, to cut to the chase, how would you characterize people who listen to jazz?
Well, you know, jazz is kind of, I'm very prejudiced about that one. But there seems to be a free-spirited, open sense of people who listen to jazz. And the research has always been that there's kind of a much more open spirit related to jazz, especially with the unpredictability of it, you know? I was listening to some stuff. In fact, I'm going to play something for you later today that kind of really gives you the example of it, you know, of where it is. What do you love about jazz?
Well, actually, I try to make my living playing it, so, and I like to listen to it. But
what do you play?
Oh, I play guitar.
Uh-huh. Oh, so but, you must have liked the piece I played during the break.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
B.B. King and Eric
Clapton. Yeah. They're, I guess you'd say they're jazz-influenced players. But the thing I find that I think sometimes in terms of mass consumption or public taste, the unpredictability of jazz is the thing that makes it hard for you to sell it to a mass public.
That's true. It's true according to how you do it. Now, of course, you could always do a predictable, like if you take something like Thelonious Monk, who has a little bit of unpredictability, but a lot of predictability. You know, it's very different than doing Charlie Parker at his height, where you don't know which way he's going to turn at any moment. People tend to like the Miles Davis, John Coltrane much more than they do the people who stretch out to the edges.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's almost like, well, it's the old story. It's like, as long as you play the melody, people like it. So people want something that they can hang on to.
Yeah, and how do you feel in your life? Are you feeling frustrated?
Yeah, I'm feeling frustrated.
Yeah, it sounds it. What do you what's the frustration of your life?
Oh, artistic, financial, personal, you know.
Yeah, it's very tough. I mean, you know, one thing I knew about jazz, when I was a kid, I was a jazz musician myself. And I remember that, you know, there was no place to make a dollar, and that most dope seemed most appealing. You know, I mean, heroin was very appealing, and all drugs were very appealing, because there was just no money to do anything. And so we were playing, and I remember some of the very greatest artists playing for $10 for a set, if they could get it. If they could get it, or a dollar to play in back of some jazz musician on a studio date. And so it's never been, all of the performance arts have never been about lucrative success. It's not going to work that way. It's about something else. And what happens when you begin performing and you lose the appreciation and you don't get the jobs and people are not hiring you, it's more than just the money. It's a young man, it's you, yelling out and screaming to people, listen to me, I want you to love me. I want you to love me, and I want you to have me around, and I want you to worship me, and or not even worship, value me in some way, please. Because I feel like I'm playing into the wind. I feel like I need somebody to really love me. And that's what I think the hungry musician is always saying. Please, somebody hear me. Somebody love me. How does that fit with you?
I go along with the part about please somebody hear me. I think that's the biggest problem, is that what you're talking about is like alienation. And I think that as you get older, you start to feel the alienation more, because when you're young, you're very idealistic. You have this very lofty, idealistic view of what you're doing, and you view it as being a great tradition. But as you get older, you start to realize it's basically every man for himself.
Well, let me ask you, every man for yourself, do you have a relationship?
Not anymore, no.
That's what I mean, every man for himself. So, how do you feel about the absence of a relationship?
Well, in some ways, I'm not bothered by it. In some ways, I am.
I'm saying part of what you've reflected to me in my talking to you, and part of what I've heard about you, just through your very words, is that there is some part of you that is aching to be loved. And that comes through. It's not just the performance. And when you have the kind of experience that you've had, and you've gotten on in years, and you've ended your relationships, and you don't miss it because it's that pain that you always have to go through in relationships, there's some part of you that wants to connect, and it wants, your heart wants to connect. You know, I wish you'd play your guitar for us one day. Send me your music, will you? Send me a piece of you playing, and I promise you, I will put it on the air.
Care of, I'll do that.
But do it at my office address. Let me give you an office
hold on
number.
Just, I have to get a pen.
Well, just call, go to my website, and you'll find
it.
Go to my website, you'll locate it. Send me your music, and remind me who you were.
All right.
Okay. What's your name, by the way?
I'd rather not say.
Okay, then just sign your letter, the man who rather would not say.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot for calling in. Right. Armand DeMille with you with the positive mind. So there it reflects another thing, you know, for the man who would rather not say. In other words, saying that he has needs is almost so diminishing to him that he doesn't want to tell us his name. And there it is. We do somewhere we all seem to want to feel the safety and comfort in life. And that safety and comfort in life very often comes from feeling cared for by somebody else. Alone is such a tough place to be in this society. You know, that's the good thing about germs. They're never alone. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I'll be back with you next week, Thursday, on 9/11 with a 2-hour special. And if you want to hear anything from us, you can go to my website, thepositivemind.com, or call my office at 212-757-4488. Here's some Sonny Rollins.
Mm-hmm.